Chapter 9. There was no gravity in the brick moon. You moved by pulling yourself along ropes slung around the walls and poles that crisscrossed the spherical chambers. The big spheres were connected by circular orifices, and as they moved deeper into the interior, it was as if they were swimming into the center of some vast honeycomb. Or maybe, as one visitor from the Datum Earth had remarked, it was like a huge old Roman-era drainage system, all concrete vaults and cylindrical passages. And after decades of occupation, the brick moon smelled that way too, despite periodic flushings of the entire volatile content, the water and all the air. A sour stink of people, of stale food and sweat and blood and piss, seemed to seep out of the very walls. It wasn't a quiet place. There was an endless clatter of pumps and fans, and the walls, where they weren't hidden by cabling and ducts and pipes, were crusted with decades' worth of junk, from antiquated tablets and comms stations to the relics of abandoned science experiments, to tokens left by those who had lived and worked here, faded photographs, children's paintings, scribbled notes, graffiti on the concrete. Even the residential area at the center of the cluster, with bunk beds and galleys and a medical center and grimy zero-gravity toilets, couldn't have looked less inviting. Most long-lived space stations got shabby. They weren't places where you could ever open the windows for a good spring clean. And after all, this rough, decades-old construction had been humanity's first colony in this earthless universe. Embarrassment wasn't an appropriate reaction. But Dev couldn't help it. And he kept an eye on his guests. They had little trouble moving around, though their postures were a bit stiff, and Roberta in particular seemed to be recoiling from touching the grimy walls. Here and there, boxes and pots held plants and flowers that grew in splashes of sunlight from the windows. The visitors' eyes were drawn to the green. Another primitive reaction, and one Dev found grimly satisfying to observe. They crossed paths with only a couple of people, both in Gap Space coveralls like Dev and his guests, who stared curiously back at the next. The brick moon was never very crowded. There was a small station staff, rotated frequently, whose main job was to maintain the antique fabric and clean up the air and water. Otherwise, there were only ever a few passengers in transit from one shuttle to another. At last, they reached the sphere known informally as the observatory. Here, much of the original troll concrete shell had been replaced by a ribbing of steel and aluminium and plates of toughened glass. There were bars for hands and feet to help visitors keep from drifting around the bubble. It was dark, the artificial light subdued. Beyond the windows, no sun was visible, and the sky was pitch black. The four of them spread out in the darkness. To Dev, whose father had been an Orthodox Catholic, this place always felt oddly like a chapel, and he spoke softly.
"It's best to wait a while to allow our eyes to adjust to the dark. The brick moon has some limited maneuverability to maintain its station and its orientation, and it's turned very slowly to ensure no one section is overexposed to the sun. But this chamber is kept facing away from the light permanently."
"I see a planet," Roberta said. She pointed at a light emerging from the dark. She thought for a moment, and Dev imagined calculations processing through her high intelligence, an exercise in celestial mechanics, a determination of what she was seeing. "Mars," she announced.
"Yes," Dev said. "A Mars, at any rate. The Mars of this stepwise universe, but its position is subtly different from that of our own Mars because of
the lack of an Earth here, of course." Again she cut him off. He suppressed his irritation. These next did seem to require an awful lot of forgiveness of the dim bulbs they dealt with. He caught Lee grinning at him, her teeth bright in the subdued light. Roberta ran her finger around the equator of the sky. "And there are asteroids." Dev could just see them now, emerging as a band of sparkles against a wider scatter of stars. Stella nodded.
"It is the wreckage of the local Earth, of course.
dead Earth, as they call it. Much of the mass of the planet seems to have been lost in the impact, thrown out of the solar system altogether, probably. But what remains is a new asteroid belt, rich in silicate rock, iron.
Dev said, This local belt has been essential in building up our facilities here. The Big O'Neill, for example, was constructed of iron and aluminium and stocked with volatiles, all gathered from dead Earth asteroids. The fact that these rocks are so close to us, compared to the classic asteroid belt, has made life a lot easier.
Roberta looked out with some interest. Dead Earth. I understand there are some groups who oppose you exploiting this resource. It's likened to grave robbing.
Lee said, But some say it's as if we're honoring the planet by making use of its wreckage.
She faced Roberta defiantly.
I suppose you think either position is illogical.
Not at all. One would have to have a very stunted emotional imagination not to have some response to this. The ruin of a world, of, presumably, a planetary biosphere every bit as mature and rich as that of Datum Earth itself. But what you're doing here is neither right nor wrong. It simply is.
She glanced around the sky.
Where is Cyclops?
Stella swam over next to her and pointed.
Up there, at 4 o'clock.
Looking that way, Dev could see only a disk of blackness, occluding the stars. He said,
Actually, what you see is just the baffle, shielding the radio telescope from leakage from the habitats, the shuttles.
He tapped a console, and a big display tablet brought up an image of a vast, lacy dish, the antenna of the spaceborne radio telescope itself. Roberta glanced up at the baffle, itself an immense structure.
A shame I can't see it with the naked eye, but I sense the scale.
Stella said, You know, astronomy, and particularly radio astronomy, was one of the first great science programs for the next, once we had organized our society sufficiently. An area where huge advances in knowledge were available based on a simple expansion of technological scale. We began with a trio of Super Arecibos. On the datum, this was a major radio telescope with its dish built into a volcanic caldera in Puerto Rico. We constructed much larger dishes in calderas on one particular Earth, near Olduvai Gorge at Pinatubo, one at Yellowstone in North America, a long-dead copy of the parent volcano on the datum. If you visualize these positions spread around the globe of the world, you will see we had coverage of the equatorial sky for 24 hours of the day. But these efforts will be surpassed as we move into space. Our first design was Cyclops out there. A single parabolic dish antenna 5 kilometers wide. We named it after a pre-Step Day proposal from a century ago to build such a telescope from a conglomeration of 1,000 smaller antennas constructed on the ground. It might be unfinished, but it's good enough to have acquired the clearest version yet of the invitation.
She fished her own tablet out of her bag and tapped it to bring up data on the signal.
In some ways, it's a classic SETI discovery. An extremely strong signal, polarized, as if it has been broadcast by a radio telescope of the kind we can build ourselves. The frequency is around the minimum of the background noise of the galaxy. We're aware of a lot of detail below the signal's top-level structure, but much of it is lost in the noise. And what we have is complex, not decipherable so far, anyhow.
Which is, Roberta said calmly, why we're all here.
Dev said, We still don't know where it's coming from. The source is stationary against the background of the stars. The source appears to be in Sagittarius.
It's logical that it should be.
Roberta glanced over her shoulder, and Dev just knew she was looking straight towards the position of the Sagittarius constellation in the sky.
The overwhelmingly most likely location of high intelligence is towards the center of the galaxy. The spiral arms, where we live, are waves of starbirth washing around the galactic disk. But at the core, where the stars are crowded close, where the energy fluxes are enormous, a dangerous place, but where the first worlds rich in rock and metal formed billions of years before Earth, that is where the peak of galactic civilization must reside. And all of that lies in the direction of Sagittarius.
Lee said,
and you think it's imperative that we pick up this invitation and figure it out?
Roberta looked back at her.
Of course. What could be more important than that?
For one thing, has it occurred to you to wonder why it should be now that they attempt to contact us? Somehow, they must know that we, or something like us, are here. A technological civilization, I mean. This despite the fact that our own radio signals cannot have traveled more than 1% or so of the distance to the galactic core.
We also know the invitation is being picked up across the long Earth, Dev mused. And, so the unscientific outernet rumors went, it had been detected in ways that had nothing to do with radio telescopes, such as directly by the roomy heads of those enigmatic humanoids, trolls. He kept his mouth shut about this. He'd learned that his next overlords didn't want to hear such lurid speculation. But on the other hand, there seemed another coincidence of timing here, to him.
Maybe, he said cautiously, they sensed we've started to move out, stepwise. And that was why they reacted now.
Stella ignored him.
Of course we must extract all the information we can from the invitation. All of it, if we're to make an informed decision on how to react.
Lee said,
You mean how to respond?
Roberta said calmly, Not necessarily. We have received an invitation. We don't have to accept it. Not until we're sure it's in our best interest.
Lee snorted.
The best interest of the next?
In the interest of all of us, all the inhabitants of the long Earth.
Dev smiled.
It's an old debate. Goes back to Carl Sagan and Stephen Hawking. Contact optimist versus the pessimists.
Roberta nodded gravely.
It is an authentic dilemma. We too debate these issues. First things first, we must learn what we are dealing with.
Stella said,
Well, certainly listening can't do any harm. As for the telescopes, we have a new design that will soon surpass the capabilities of the Cyclops.
She swiped her tablet over the bubble's consoles, and the big display screens on the walls filled with new images. Dev saw a graphic of a sphere suspended in space, from which towers extended in all directions, like spines, dwarfing the central mass. It looked oddly like a sea urchin.
Lee asked, What is this?
Roberta said,
Tell me what you see.
Lee shrugged.
It looks like an asteroid with towers sticking out of it.
It is an asteroid, Roberta said evenly, with towers sticking out of it.
This is your Clark project? Named after a writer of the last century who proposed...
Dev swallowed.
Those spines must be hundreds of miles long.
Thousands, actually.
And where are you going to get your asteroid?
Roberta glanced out of the window.
We will use the object you have already harvested. Your lump.
That's intended for other purposes. More O'Neills.
We can pay, Roberta said dismissively.
Lee said,
I guess I can see the purpose.
With a thing that scale, you'd be able to pick up very long wavelength radiation, well beyond the usual radio lengths, tens of kilometers even.
Gravity waves, too.
That's the idea. We've no reason to think the invitation is restricted to the wavelengths at which we've detected it so far. We want it all.
Dev's engineering chops began to tingle.
It's one hell of a construction project. The O'Neill took us a decade to build. How long do you estimate it will take you to build that behemoth?
Roberta said blandly,
2 months.
Now it was Dev's turn to laugh. Lee just looked blank. Even Stella seemed surprised.
Dev asked, How can you possibly do it so quickly? Given the manufacturing capacity we have at Gap Space, even if you suddenly expanded it 100%.
Stella said,
Replicators. You're talking about using Silver Beetle technology to build the Clark, aren't you? That's the only way you could get it done so quickly.
Roberta said,
It's under consideration.
Dev glanced at Lee, who winked back. It was nice to see these necks disagreeing with each other,
even if Dev had no idea what they were talking about. He asked pleasantly,
"And what is silver beetle technology?"
Stella looked at him. "I guess you'll find out soon enough. Highly efficient replicator and reassembly technology. Alien technology. It already destroyed one stepwise Earth, as far as we know."
Dev just stared. "It destroyed an Earth?"
"Long story," Stella said. Roberta said,
"No technology is dangerous if handled correctly. And it would allow an extremely rapid construction, just as you say. The Clark telescope would be very large, but mostly structurally simple. An ideal application of replicator techniques. Of course, preliminary results would begin to come in much earlier than full construction, and then we will have decisions to make on how to react. I think I've seen enough here. We must talk in more detail. I need to meet your senior people, while avoiding having them take us for tours of the O'Neill. Stella, what do they do on that object?"
Stella grinned. "They walk on grass and chase zero-gravity chickens along the spin axis."
Lee flared. "You dismiss us, don't you? Everything we built here. Spaceflight is an ancient dream cherished for longer than people like you have even been in existence, and we're achieving it at last."
"Perhaps, but child," Roberta said sadly, "can you not see that all of this has already been swept away? Because the galaxy is now reaching down to you. Well, there is much to do. Shall we return to our shuttle?"